why what the Yadu dynasty did is part of the pastimes of the Lord, the pastime of the Lord, because it was directly inspired by his own internal potency. Krishna doesn't directly deal with the external potency. Everything is done through the agency of the modes of nature. Maya dyakshina prakriti sunyate sacharachara. And moreover, by his expansions of the Purusha avatar, the Paramatma feature of the Lord, is overseeing indirectly the activities of material nature. This is directly, the Lord is there, and he's contemplated and then decided that the Yadu dynasty should be removed from earth. We discussed those different reasons. And now it's the event is happening. It's a leela. The members of the Yadu dynasty, at least those who are not his eternal associates, they somehow remained in Dwarka, but they went to Prabhas rest. And after arriving there, we read yesterday, they took their bath, and with the water of the place of pilgrimage, they offered their respects to the forefathers, demigods, and great sages, and thus satisfied them. He gave cows to the brahmanas in royal charity. So what we're going to hear this morning, largely it's cultural. There are verses like that. They're not instructing specific qualities. It's guidance on how to lead one's life in the proper way. So, two verses. We'll just read the verses first. The brahmanas were not only given well-fed cows in charity, but also gold coins, bedding, clothing, animal skin seats, blankets, horses, elephants, girls, and sufficient land for maintenance. Here's what he said about the girls. It was arranged for some of the brahmanas who were in difficulty for marriage to be given girls, the wives to be married. What's a brahmana going to do with elephants? So, Prabhupada often repeated, for each brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, there's a means of maintenance. And the means of maintenance for the brahmana is six in number. Patan, patan, yajan, yajan, dan, pratigraha. So, dan, Harivas uses that term a lot. Dan means charity. So they receive, they teach, and they study. They worship and they teach worship. Yajan yajan. And dan, they receive in charity, but they also give in charity. A brahmana doesn't accumulate. The kripana accumulates and the brahmana distributes. A nice story of the Prabhupada, or that Harivilas told about Prabhupada yesterday. A stage, I forget what the question was. How does one know when one has...
When one can take the credit.
Take the credit, yeah. When you can transform someone, train someone to become a Vaishnava. Whatever it is that you receive that you give to others. It's a brahminical principle. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his biographies confirm this, but Prabhupada would often say that he would devise ways and means by which those who were his followers would always be poor. Because if they had something, then he would devise something where they should spend it, so they would have nothing. And they would never be, you know, comfortable, enjoyers of prosperity, but they would be in the situation of being servants of the Lord, depending upon him. It's a nice position for Brahmanas and Vaishnavas to be in. So it works out that way, sometimes involuntarily, but Prabhupada's teaching, the Vaishnava who receives $1,000, $1,000,000 in the morning, by the evening it is spent. So, if they received elephants, I can't imagine they thought, oh, this is very nice, I'm a Brahmana with an elephant. Chances are they found a suitable recipient and donated it to some king, gained over, entrusted their elephant with some king to care for or something. Who knows? The point that Prabhupada is making, the cultural point, is the Brahmanas therefore had no economic problems. The Kshatriya kings and rich mercantile men would provide them with all they needed, and in exchange, the Brahmanas were completely devoted to the elevation of society. That was the way of social cooperation between the different castes. When the Brahmana class or caste gradually became easygoing, being fed by the society, although they had no brahminical qualifications, they degraded themselves into Brahmabandhus, or disqualified Brahmanas. And thus, other members of society also gradually fell down from the social standard of progressive life. As described in the Bhagavad Gita, the caste system is the creation of the Lord and is arranged according to the quality of work rendered to the society, and not in terms of birthright, as falsely claimed in the present degraded society. Prabhupada doesn't hold back any punches. He's very explicit about what the system is and the degradation of that system in modern times. A couple of points. It's embedded here. When the positive is Brahmanas are necessary for elevation. The negative is, in the absence of qualified Brahmanas, everything glides down. So, first, for Kali Yuga to progress, and you can turn it around the other way, for the antidote for Kali Yuga to advance, so for Kali Yuga to progress, the first indication that Kali Yuga had struck was the abuse of brahminical strength by Sringi, the son of a Brahmana. When a brahminical character or quality becomes corrupted or abused, then the rest of society goes down. We'll see it the other way. If one wants to take this Kali Yuga condition and elevate it, it's essential to have qualified Brahmanas. And then with qualified Brahmanas, gradually things can elevate. The antidote requires qualified Brahmanas. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada wanted to create a class of first-class men. That was his phrase. I want to establish a class of first-class men. What does that mean? Persons who are factually brahminically qualified. What does that mean? Or brahmanas and vaishnavas. But when that phrase brahmanas and vaishnavas, from definition, it's a long essay. I mean, it's like that thick of brahmanism and vaishnavism by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It's brilliant, and one of the themes is a brahmana is one who knows Brahman. And one who knows Brahman, to properly know Brahman, must know Vishnu, because he's the basis of Brahman. Brahmano hi pratishtha. So a Brahmana, one cannot become a Vaishnava without becoming a Brahmana. Turn it around and say, we're trying to become Vaishnavas, that means we must become Brahmanas. At least by quality, our occupation may be something different than, you know, the standard sense of what a Brahmana must be, because a Vaishnava can do anything for Krishna. Like in Mayapur, next to Prabhupada's Vyasasan, there's a picture of Srila Prabhupada. In that picture, it's the Mayapur first building off in the distance, and over on the right-hand side is a big agricultural field, and Prabhupada is walking with a few disciples, and over in the other part of the picture or the photograph is a devotee, and it was Jai Pataka Maharaj, plowing the field. So does that mean, therefore, Jai Pataka Maharaj is a Vaishya? He's a Vaishnava who, under the instruction of his spiritual master, was learning how to plow the field so that he could teach others, this is how you do it. Like that other example that when Prabhupada says, when a Brahmana is holding the hand of his student, showing him how to write the alphabet, does that mean, you know, he becomes one who doesn't know how to write the alphabet? He's the teacher. He's teaching, here's how you do it. So as a Brahmana does like that, and is not the student, he's the teacher, the Vaishnava is a teacher by example. So for service to Krishna, a Vaishnava can do anything. And that's the spirit of, for Krishna, I can do anything, as Krishna's service requires. To become such a Vaishnava, one requires to know what is Sat, what is spirit, what is truth, and abide by truth. And then to perform that function for the personality of Godhead. So the point is, we're being trained, we, ISKCON members, are being trained to become Brahmanas. And then comes this thing, cultural point, that for Brahmanas to exhibit, well, both, to exhibit detachment and to be able to stay fully focused on that activity. Patan patan yajan yajan dan pratigraha. The dan pratigraha part needs to be there. So to, I'm going to hear in the next purport about, well, I'll read the sentence. The perfection of human life is attained by following three principles of civilization. Protecting cows, maintaining the Brahminical culture, and above all, becoming pure devotees of the Lord. So these two are, again and again, especially in the first canto, emphasized. Brahminical culture, cow protection. There's three others that are added. Protection of children, protection of women, protection of elderly. But of those five, two are most prominent. Cow protection and Brahminical culture. So here is mention of cows being given in charity and Brahminical culture. The protection of Brahminical culture, or the maintenance of Brahminical culture, is literally just maintenance. Here, the Brahmanas were maintained. That's part of maintaining Brahminical culture. Those who are qualified Brahmanas should be maintained. particularly mentioned by Kshatriyas and Vaishyas in the Varna category, and by Grahasthas in general in the Ashram category. Brahmanas are to be maintained. In part, it's so they don't have to get a job, because their job is brahminical activity. If they're actually qualified, that's what they should be doing. And so that they can do it, second part is with focus, they're maintained. And it's good for the society to value, this is the other part of brahminical culture, to value the brahmana. And therefore, one of the expressions of valuing the brahmana is to offer something to the brahmana. When I was growing up in America, I don't know if it happens anymore, I doubt it, but one of the things, it was like a cute thing, really didn't understand the principle behind it, but bringing an apple to the teacher, even in America, a culture of no culture. And, you know, what it, the gesture was just, was literally that, it's just a gesture, but, you know, something for the teacher. So sometimes the students would do that, bring an apple, bring a flower, bring a bouquet of flowers. It's a nice gesture, but it's a gesture of respect. And that's another part of Brahminical culture, respect. Of course, one has to be discriminating, respect where respect is due. Largely, people don't know where respect is due. Everything has become corrupted. But where respect is due, respect goes. And so, in a formal gesture, one offers something. Now, in these, what's being given to the brahmanas is far more than a formal gesture. They're not just offering an apple or a bouquet of flowers. It's gold coins, bedding, clothing, animal skin seats, blankets, horses, elephants, sufficient land for maintenance. It's more than a gesture. But it is respect. And respect is very important. It's very important in many ways. One of the ways it's important is it opens one's heart to receive from the person who one respects, the brahmana. If minus respect, you can't receive. They may have a great wealth of value, but without respect, even if it's offered, it won't be received. It'll be dismissed. All those are components in maintaining a brahminical culture. It can be formalized. It is being presented here, formalized in a cultural act. We give charity to brahmanas because we're members of the Yadu dynasty. And because we're royal family, we give charity in a royal style. But the essence can be lost just by following ritual or formality. Culture can be eroded if one doesn't understand the purpose behind it, because Kali Yuga, when, you know, greed prevails, so I can, you're calculating how much should I give, and all of that's not given from the heart, it's given in a different way. I'll become more prestigious if I give lots, and yeah, but if I give lots, then I'll have less myself, and all this calculating business that has nothing to do with the real spirit is. It's maintaining the persons and maintaining the culture of brahminical respect, so that those who are qualified can actually do their service. There are a cultural point, personal cultural point. There are a few situations within the range of my devotional service where I'm consciously and actively promoting the maintenance of Brahminical culture. There are persons that are doing such fantastic Brahminical service that I would like to see that they're maintained so that they can just do that. But, you know, that's not so common in our ISKCON society. What's more common in ISKCON society is the guru. He gets charity, or the sannyasi gets charity. It's like one of the things, sorry to say it, but in India, you know, they like to have their brahmacharis go into the public to receive donations, because saffron cloth means they receive donations. And a more qualified person or equally qualified person that's not wearing saffron cloth may not receive the donation because it's not saffron cloth. What if a brahmana is a grihastha? Or conversely, what if a brahmachari isn't a brahmana? Supposing he's a vaishya. And, you know, what's going to happen with that donation that's received, and what's the purity of reception, and so on and so on. So where I'm concerned, it's just at least it's a gesture, because it's repeated and repeated and repeated, and it certainly makes sense that maintenance and preservation of Brahminical culture, that those who are qualified grihastha brahmanas should be maintained so they can full-time do that. And it would be nice to have at least some examples of that culturally in place, so people can see, oh, here's what that means. And it's bona fide. It's scripturally bona fide. It's good for society to do like that. And then they get the full energy of a brahmana that doesn't have to think about how am I going to maintain myself. His full absorption, a qualified person is fully absorbed in thinking how to do my Brahminical work. It's not a payment, not a paycheck. It's charity, it's a culture where those persons that have that quality and are doing it very, very nicely. This is one of the most valuable, if not the most valuable, ways of turning Kali Yuga around. Qualified people doing this quality service. Maintain them. All these charities were meant for the brahmanas whose lives were devoted entirely to the welfare of society, both spiritually and materially. The brahmanas were not given their services as paid servants, but the society provided them with all necessities. This is the way of social cooperation for the elevation of society. And in exchange, the brahmanas were completely devoted to the elevation of society. It's a model, and the model is Krishna's model. It works. It's not how we function, but it's Krishna's model. So carrying on. Text 28. Thereafter, they offered the brahmanas, the Yadus offered the brahmanas highly delicious foodstuffs, first offered to the personality of Godhead, and offered their respectful obeisances by touching their heads to the ground. They lived perfectly by protecting the cows and the brahmanas. There we are again. So in the purport, Prabhupada is taking this phrase, the perfection of human life. So that's, you know, in common exchanges, to speak about the perfection of human life, that's like very bold. Perfection of human life. But Prabhupada is speaking it very authoritatively because it's coming from scripture. What is the perfection? There are different ways where that phrase is completed. The perfection of human life. The perfection of human life is to achieve love of God. But you can go down the other end too, and there's a place in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 41, the Vyavasayatmika verse. And Prabhupada says it very clearly. The perfection of human life is to renounce the material conception of life. Because without renouncing the material conception of life, you're not going to get there. It's an anchor, and you can row all you like. Put all the wind in the sails you like. If the anchor's in, you're not going to move. The anchor of the bodily conception. So here's cultural. The perfection of human life is attained. This is the method. By following the three principles. Brahminical culture, cow protection, and above all becoming pure devotees of the Lord. And he just says the same thing in reverse order. Without becoming a pure devotee of the Lord, one cannot perfect one's human life. Then he says it differently. The perfection of human life is to be elevated to the spiritual world. So, but again, you're not going to be elevated to the spiritual world if there isn't those who can elevate you to the spiritual world. And having respect for those who can so elevate you. Brahminical culture. It's for me at least, it's hard to... There's no model. Or in the world in general. You know, where are the brahmanas? It's not the professors. They're debated people teaching gobbledygook. I know, anyway. So where's the example? Or, you know, in the priests that commonly, there's exceptions, but you know, largely, the priests that are maintaining, it's like, you know, there's pure persons, but it spoils the whole picture of going to the sacred place and all they want is what's in your pocket? It goes on. And it's not just in one place. I could tell some stories, but it's not just, you know, certain places. It's all over. It's pervasive. So where are those persons that are going to elevate society, that are simply dedicated to elevation of society and have the qualification to do so? Model. Effective personality culture. So it's hard to think of the upliftment as a result of Brahminical culture, that the benefit that can go to society, because we don't have models of it. So here, at least scripturally, the perfection of human life is to be elevated to the spiritual world, where there's no birth, no death, no disease, no old age. That is the highest perfectional aim of human life. And he goes the other way. Without this aim, any amount of material advancement in so-called comforts can only bring the defeat of the human form of life. It's not like, you know, just losing an argument or losing some money or losing your job, or it's losing the human form of life, the value of the human form of life without principles in place. So it's strong. Then Prabhupada speaks about what's in the verse. The brahmanas were fed highly delicious foodstuffs, prasad, first offered to the personality of Godhead. So he explains then, brahmanas and Vaishnavas won't eat anything except prasad. After all, the Lord supplies all kinds of foodstuff both to the human being animals, a human being must be conscious of the fact that all foodstuffs, namely grains, vegetables, milk, water, etc., the prime necessities of life, are supplied for mankind by the Lord. And such foodstuffs cannot be manufactured by any scientist or materialist in a laboratory or factory established by human effort. Prabhupada doesn't resist. Because those are things that we value. What, you know, technology can produce, and proof that there's value, people consider that it's of value, is, you know, they'll spend so much of their hard-earned money to get those things that they value. Probably the jobs of the persons in this room are based upon the value that people have in, you know, material things that technology can generate. And his Prabhupada's point is, you know, excuse me, but food, grain, vegetable, rice, water, and when the government leaders are predicting, Gopal Krishnamurti was sharing that the Indian government really concerned about scarcity of water. What's going to happen when there's scarcity of water? Through the development of technology, now there's a booming economy or increasingly prosperous economy. What to do when there isn't water? Or there isn't enough food, etc. If everything is simply economics, that is, not agricultural economics, but the other kind, industrial economics, or materialistic economics, it's a loser. Wrong direction, and with the wrong direction, very undesirable consequences that are certainly going to come, provided the same path continues. And greed is there, so the same path will continue. So Brahmanas and Vaishnavas need to provide an alternative model for people to look at. So, the intelligent class of men are called Brahmanas. And those who have realized the absolute truth in his supreme personal feature are called Vaishnavas. But both of them accept foodstuffs, which are the remnants of sacrifice. And what did Prabhupada just do here? He made a distinction between Brahmanas that are not Vaishnavas and Brahmanas that are Vaishnavas. And even Brahmanas that are not Vaishnavas accept only foodstuffs offered to the Supreme. Now the concept of what that is and how it's done, the procedures and the rituals, certainly are going to vary, but the principle is observed by both. Not simply animals, just like, you know, I'm hungry so I eat. And eat what? You know, it doesn't matter, I'm hungry. An article someone suggested that I look at. So there's a group of Buddhists somewhere. It's very, very popular, very disciplined, very, very austere group. And the persons that are in that training, they do a certain amount of sadhana, a certain amount of intense study, and then a certain part of the day, the monks are sent out into the public to receive whatever people offer. And they don't have any dietary restriction, whatever people offer, because it then is considered just like you're not picky, you're dependent upon. You don't have a God concept. You're just dependent. You're just, you know, dependent on whatever arrangement is intended for you. That, whatever that is. Restriction. Very austere. That's their lifestyle. And it's a very popular, you know, it's known, so people receive, they give in charity. Who knows what charity? Go through Chinatown, and just the smells through Chinatown of what's in the restaurants is or sattvic person, you know, shocking. But anyway, and that's Buddhism. I mean, what a distortion. Very popular. You know, the guy on top is a real powerful guy, and whatever. And it has convinced a number of followers, and the followers are growing. And so respect can go to the degree of sense control that they have. That's good. A discipline that's there. But then, in what way is it directed? Not, you know, in a descending dharmic principle, just something somebody made up. So, there are these two classes, those who are intellectuals and those that are Vaishnavas. Both of them accept foodstuffs, which are the remnants of sacrifice. Sacrifice is ultimately meant to satisfy Yajna Purush, Vishnu. In Bhagavad Gita 3.13, it is said that one who accepts foodstuffs as remnants of sacrifice is freed from all sinful reactions. And one who cooks foodstuffs for maintenance of his body takes in all kinds of sins, which lead only to suffering. Foodstuffs prepared by the Yadus at Prabha's pilgrimage site to offer to the bona fide Brahmanas were all offered to the personality of Godhead Vishnu. And then they didn't just do this, they bowed their heads before, they touched their heads to the ground before the Brahmanas. The Yadus or any enlightened family in Vedic culture are trained for attainment of human perfection by total cooperation of the service between the different divisions of social orders. During the time, it was probably by now 3 weeks ago, in Tuaco Temple, I was there at the Sunday program, and Orthodox Jewish young man, 25, 26 years old, I'm guessing, came to the temple. We were spending some time after the lecture speaking. And one after the next, person were coming and offering obeisances. And every time you'd go like that, like, what's all this about? It's a cultural matter. And part of that cultural matter embedded in this last sentence is, why is it there? It's cooperation between the different divisions of social order. It's not the person, but it's the service, or that you say that the this is my understanding, the respect that's offered to a sannyasi. It's anyone who's a sannyasi, an accultured person offers respect to anyone who's a sannyasi. Even Prabhupada advised us that way when it comes to Mayavadi sannyasis, because it happened in Mayapur. So Mayavadi sannyasis came to visit Mayapur. And it was obvious that they were sannyasis, and it was also obvious that they were Mayavadis by how they were dressed and their tilak and everything. So, you know, why would they come to Mayapur? I don't know, but they came to Mayapur. And the devotees asked Prabhupada, what should we do? How should we interact with them? And his instruction was, you pay your obeisances. You don't interact intimately with them, but you pay your obeisances. The cultural point. So we're discriminating from whom we hear. It doesn't mean we throw away respect. Preserves Vedic culture. The word Uru Rasam, we had just one final paragraph, is very significant. Uru Rasam, highly delicious. Vegetarian foods are thousands of varieties. It can be highly delicious. All such preparations are in the mode of goodness, and therefore may be offered to the personality of Godhead, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 9.26. The Lord accepts only foodstuffs which are within the range of fruits, flowers, leaves, and liquids, provided they are offered in complete devotional service. So here's the highlight of this paragraph. Devotional service is the only criterion for a bona fide offering to the Lord. I mean, it must be the right ingredients, because that's part of what devotion is. I can't offer something to Krishna that's an unofferable item, however devoted I may pretend it to be. So the cleanliness and the quality and the variety, and but the criterion is it's offered with love and devotion. Therefore, all those other things are attended to. Krishna then accepts. The Lord assures that he positively eats such foodstuffs offered by the devotees. Conclusion. So judging from all sides, the Yadus were perfectly trained, civilized persons. And their being cursed by the Brahmana sages was only by the desire of the Lord. The whole incident was a warning to all concerned that no one should behave lightly with Brahmanas or Vaishnavas. End of the chapter. A purpose of the Lord is being fulfilled. The purpose of the Lord being withdrawing the members of the Yadu dynasty, but at the same time he's imparting a lesson. He chooses to not say one should never offend. Instead he says no one should behave lightly, because that's the circumstance. The circumstance is boys who were spoofing the Brahmanas. So in one sense it's an offense, but it's, you know, even their training should be that respect, even amongst children, for Brahmanas. It's, you know, absence of that respect can be calamitous in someone's life. At least, you know, the culture should be there. The message that we're receiving, Prabhupada is saying, the whole Leela is to help us understand this point. On the one side, the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas are so important. The other side is, we need them. So now we have the opportunity to interact with them because we recognize the need. Now that opportunity should never be taken lightly. Never become casual, familiar, taking things lightly. This discussion we were having, that familiarity can breed contempt. So the antidote for familiarity is respect. So respect should always go Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. And gee, we're associating with Vaishnavas. So one should never disrespect. How do you protect from that? Always respect. And then there's some challenge because we're interacting so closely. And that's good. We're interacting closely. That's good. Never lose respect while interacting closely, because it's easy when interacting closely that respect kind of goes down and becomes casual and take it lightly, and the next thing you know, we're going to hear. That's how the next thing begins. The Yadu dynasty members, after distributing in charity, they had their little festival and they were, you know, in a sporting mood and began speaking, you know, strongly, and the others took offense and they reacted strongly and, you know, went into one of things. They annihilated each other. Having a light spirit, light, happy, jolly mood is nice. Even when doing that, be careful. Respect. The Brahm lesson. Prabhupada is ending the chapter with. I'll read it again. So, judging from all sides, the Yadus were perfectly trained, civilized persons, and their being cursed by the Brahmana sages was only by the desire of the Lord. The whole incident was a warning to all concerned that no one should behave lightly with Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports for this chapter. Any comments or questions?
Just not frame my questions, sorry. But I appreciate, Maharaj, your class very much. I immensely enjoy hearing the economics model and Brahmanical culture. What's the solution, really? Like, decided that I want to spend time doing... Last year, I have not made any money, practically. And it's tremendously strong-minded to be supported by others and all. But it's... And you may recommend this human job. I'm seeing it's tough, very tough.
Hey, yeah. Well, here's another layer. Rabindra Swarup Prabhu, who is one of our most scholarly devotees in our society, has concern, a Brahminical principle concern, about salaries for devotees. You're familiar with this. It's the phrase is wages for sages. You've heard that one? It's an issue. Wages for sages. That doesn't sound right, although, you know, the alliteration is interesting. Rabindra's point is, some people say, look, we can't get qualified people unless we take care of them. And to take care of them, we have to give them their necessities. And, you know, so that means, you know, supply them a salary. You do the service and do it full time. They will take care of you. But you know, Rabindra's point is, that's sudra. A brahmana is genuinely, it's just charity. It's not a wage. And a brahmana who takes the position of receiving a wage, he loses his brahminical independence. Because a brahmana can say, you know, like Chanakya Pandit, you know, you're not prepared to accept my advice? Okay, that's fine. I'm going to leave. It's not like, but you know, it's detached. I don't require, and so he lived very simply and like that. By charity is one thing, by salary or wages is another thing. And there's this dialogue that doesn't have a clear solution to it. At least, you know, your role primarily here is managerial, administrative. There are brahminical functions that you do, but largely the service that you're doing is administrative. Now, what to do? Not just you, but, you know, those who are temple presidents, should we pay them? And as soon as that element comes in, you can fire them, just like that. You know, like, I don't like your performance, like you do in the workplace, just, you don't have a job. Then you're a hired person to become a sudra. Sit and anyway, wag your tail, woof woof, throw me a bone. Okay, here's a bone. Oh, now I have a job, thank you. So, the occupation you now have is you have some independence. It's a vaishya, it's an entrepreneurial thing, but you know, previously it's a sudra. You just do some technical thing and you're given money, and you know, there's maybe more money involved in that than what you're now doing, but you know, if they don't throw you the bone, you're finished. So, back to Brahminical culture, there are persons that are especially and even practically exclusively very, very accomplished in Brahminical skill. A Kshatriya is different, not by charity, but because they're giving protection, then they're provided with taxes. And the taxes goes into the treasury, and by that treasury. So the Kali Yuga-ized version is the persons that are administrators, they give taxes and they pay themselves handsomely. And they're not taking care of the people that they're supposed to give protection to. At least, you know, largely. To some extent, yes, but largely, no. So to change that around, the persons that are Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras have to be persons of character. And that person, that character is going to come from the Brahmanas. If it's not going to come from the Brahmanas, it's not going to come at all. There'll be corrupt personalities in all the different positions of society. Brahminical culture says that's a foremost value. So how to translate that into, you know, practical action within our society besides reading in the Bhagavatam and thinking, oh, that's very nice, then you just, then nothing changes. I'm proposing at least those that are doing very, not just valuable work, because administration is also valuable work, but particularly those that are doing brahminical work, we take care of them so they can focus on their brahminical work. Otherwise, we have the model, which is, it's a workable model. You have persons who are grihasthas, who have IT jobs, and they get brahminical initiation, and they do brahminical work. And that's elevating their quality. So that also works. But if there's someone that actually has truly brahminical quality, and is adding great, great value in brahminical services to the society in general, that example of providing maintenance for that person is a good model. It will benefit not only the individual, but then that doesn't have to have a Kali Yuga job to maintain themselves and their family. Anyway, to move it into the world of action is a challenge. Is anything else? Yes.
So as you see, that done by just providing the shelter and food to them, and then some, how is it?
On the financial end, yeah. Their necessities, whatever that is. But a point that I was trying to make is it's more than the financial, it's the respect. Because if they have something of value to offer, then there has to be receptivity to receive it. And that's respect. That's the in switch is by offering respect, not just material things. Partly offering material things means it's a gesture of respect. But it's more than that. Because that those things can be done in a dutiful manner and you just move on. Like, you know, in a kind of, I'm busy. here's some, we'll send you a check once a month and, you know, anyway, you get what I'm saying. It's more of an internal regard than just an external act. And that's maintaining brahminical culture, part of it. There's a tendency.
So
especially of which members?
Family members
and other Vaishnavas. So you're saying the same thing that I said.
Family members, basically.
Huh? Family. You speak so fast I can understand. Could you speak a little slower, please?
Family members.
Okay. Say a whole sentence. What's your point? Summarize your point in one sentence, because I'm sorry. I don't mean to embarrass you. I'm not getting it.
So, interact more with the Vaishnavas.
Yeah.
Basically, we interact more with them.
Okay.
So, already, there is a tendency of losing respect or something like that.
Sure. Okay. So, guard against that tendency, to make sure that there's respect. Let's say you know there's a statistic that says there's a certain intersection, that they have more accidents in that intersection in the city of Seattle than any other place, and you're driving through that intersection, what do? You drive slowly and you're very cautious. Same principle. Take this point you just made and, okay, now here I am in the family, and I'm spending more time here in the family, and there's more tendency in that situation to become familiar and have problems because of familiarity. So now what am I going to do? I'm going to be very cautious. Very carefully, you know, be very attentive and pay, you know, put something on the other side of the pan scale. And establish that culture within the family. The culture of respect. And it's not, you know, it's not receiving only. Make sure that you receive respect. That you receive respect by showing respect. Example of showing respect. What do you think? Okay. And then extend that to the Sangha of Vaishnavas. And then respect to the, you know, it's sometimes there's this thing that we treat guests better than we treat our friends. We go out of our way to, like, you know, help somebody that's new feel like comfortable and happy, and, you know, then it goes back to the more concentric circles. We're less attentive right in the home. So I'm an advocate of the charity begins at home. And when you're truly charitable at home, when you're truly respectful in the home, that's just part of your character wherever you are. Because the most important part is where the relationships are most, there's most surface contact. That's where you're going to get more of the friction. Lots of lubrication in those close surface contact places, or charity begins at home. And that family that has that spirit amongst themselves, it's a very attractive family. Qualities are wow. And then the concentric circles out. They can help the community become more Krishna conscious. They can help those who are guests and friends become more, and they, you know, keep going. The world. It starts at home. It starts within the heart. Anything else? Yes?
The fault you find in others, your mind, how do you understand, like,
that? Well, one way to understand that is do it in reverse. That is, if there is not such a condition of heart, what is it that one sees? Like, say, in Uttama Adhikari Vaishnav, what do they see? They see everyone is engaged in Krishna's service. Except one person. Themselves. That's how they see. It's not that they're blind. They can't see. So this person is engaged in Krishna's service very favorably. That person is engaged in Krishna's service less favorably. But they're engaged in Krishna's service. Then it's not fault finding. If your mood is that my position is a servant of Krishna. And I'm moving along the path of life. And here comes the situation coming the other direction, down the path. In what way would Krishna like me to serve him? That's how you see. This opportunity, there's that opportunity of service.
So I have one more in the same line. Who finds fault with you is your well wisher. So if somebody really tries to insult us either, or how do I mean, what is the understanding of?
Depends on your level of consciousness how you understand that statement. The other half of that statement is he was appreciating me as my enemy. What does that mean? Do I see my friends as my enemies and my enemies as my friends? What's going on? So it depends on your level of consciousness. But if your level of consciousness is in a humble mood, someone is pointing out to me how I can improve myself. This is, now behind may be a mean spirit, but overlooking that, they're my well-wisher. Now one can see. You can certainly see that they have a mean spirit. Or they're misinformed. Or their intention is malice. You can see those things. But you can see something else too. I need to improve myself, and here's an opportunity to improve myself, and they're providing this opportunity for me to improve myself. Capacity of discrimination. Behind it all is, you know, you're coming closer to a purified state. At the beginning stage is tolerance, but a higher stage is I'm a servant, they're rendering some service. Also, they're helping me become a better person. They're helping me to learn this nice quality of tolerance.
It seems easier to, like, yeah, say something, but it becomes easy with disrespect, or like you feel you disrespected from... What is the dynamics which is in
place? Yes, yes. And our expectations. Because they may also be instruments for elevation, including the quality of, you know, being tolerant. But we it's attachment. Because if we could step out of that circumstance and look at the person is very dear to me because of their wonderful qualities. And so if there's something on the totality of their wonderful qualities or something where there's some misunderstanding from their side, it can be a wide range of things. They receive some misinformation, or maybe they're troubled by something else and this behavior is coming out because of that trouble of something else. And you know, you don't simply react to this little speck in the big picture. You're keeping the big picture. You understand, this is a very wonderful person. So there must be something that's troubling them. Either something that I'm doing that's prompting that, or something else that's going on in their life that's prompting that. So then you don't have to be, you can be in this nice space of being reflective and thinking, what is the best way that I can be of service to this other individual and in service to our relationship to clear up this misunderstanding? If it's a misunderstanding or if it's something that factually I'm just not noticing, I'm not detecting, and they're very kindly pointing it out to me. Although, you know, maybe not done in a spirit that I makes me joyful. You see the big picture, and the relationship is an essence. You asked your question, I was thinking of some circumstances where I'm dealing with it, some individual and an individual, and there's this thing going on between them, and it's because I respect both individuals very much. There's another one. You know, how do you deal with
that? Is there any concept of being detached while becoming attached?
Well, it's because we want to be the enjoyer.
Okay.
What's the purpose of the relationship? So that I can be an enjoyer. And now this enjoyment just got interfered with. Enjoying anymore. And that's not the purpose of the relationship. The purpose of the relationship is that Krishna should be pleased. And if there's something that's in our relationship that's, there's friction, well, Krishna's not being pleased, so what can we do to help make the arrangement so that Krishna's pleased? And then it's nice again. Even working out a problem, you know, a misunderstanding, behavior that didn't seem right. Yeah, because it's pleasing to Krishna to do so. Yes.
You hear so much about cultivating human service, like it's particularly difficult to be in that process.
Well, how strongly do you want to return to the spiritual world? Adopt that consciousness, it's a ticket to get there. It's, the other is just conditioning. However you may, you know, whatever, however hard it may be, it's just conditioning. It's ephemeral. It's not substantial. It's difficult because we're attached to being the enjoyer. And we're not, that's not our healthy position. Our position, healthy position is we're the servant. And you, however many yeah buts you come up with, it's that, that's still a fact. So we strive for that. Because it's our healthy position. It's a natural position. It's a happy position. It's a position where there's so much strength to be a humble servant. You're resilient like anything. It's wonderful. And it doesn't, the application may change, but the mood doesn't change. Very nice. Our conditioning is very strong. Okay. This is stronger. Our conditioning is kartahamiti manyate. There's this problem, I'm going to address the problem, fix the problem. And that's part of the problem. Instead of, you know, the ground rule that says, my dear Lord Krishna, I'm your eternal servant. I'm going on the path of trying to cultivate this mood of humble service, and here comes this very challenging situation. How do I maintain this, in attempt to maintain this mood of humble service, how is it you'd like me to serve in this situation? You know, lose track of who you are and start adopting all these other identities that are false and artificial, and a wind comes and they're blown away. And then we become something else. That's who we are. We're little tiny sparks that are servants of Krishna. In every circumstance, that's true. So, adopting that mood is not artificial, it's who we are. And again, there's great strength in it. It's not weakness. It's strength. Spiritual strength. This is part of our medical culture. Amanitvam adambitvam. The two first items mentioned in that list of what is knowledge. Humility and pridelessness. Not a mistake that Krishna put those two first. Because how can you have knowledge? How can you... And with so it's brahminical strength, brahmatejas, as opposed to the other kind. Any other kind. Just you become an instrument of Krishna. And it feels good to be an instrument of Krishna. The other doesn't feel right, even if it's, you know, you're sailing along. It doesn't, it's not, something's missing. It's not right. But to speak of when you hit a brick wall, a conflict situation, it's just, you don't see your way out of it. Like her example, someone that's very close to you all of a sudden does or says something that's like, it hurts. Because, you know, we're in forgetfulness of Krishna. And if you're remembrance of Krishna, it's another opportunity for service. Yes, yes.
My question is, I know there is always something or the other which is family life or in a material life. If I leave some of those responsibilities...
No, it doesn't. Don't leave the responsibility. I cut you off, I'm sorry. You don't have to leave responsibility to be Krishna conscious. You just do the same responsibility in the mood of, I'm doing this as service to Krishna. Family, in the mood of service to Krishna. Here is my husband. Here are my children. They are spirit souls, part and parcel of Krishna. I have an opportunity to serve Krishna through these little spirit souls, parts of us. I'm a little spirit soul serving Krishna. It's service to Krishna. It's not material. It's not material. If you're seeing yourself as a spirit soul and them as spirit soul, the circumstances is also Krishna's energy. How can I best address serving Krishna in this circumstance? In the home, in the workplace, in the marketplace, in the public forum, at the temple, you know, wherever the medium may be. Identity doesn't change. It doesn't, you know, The idea of material, we discussed this yesterday, the idea of material means forgetfulness of Krishna. So in your home, don't forget Krishna. It's not Krishna's only in the temple. Krishna's in your home. Krishna's in the heart of your family members. You're getting an opportunity to serve them. So it's not material anymore. It's because it's not separate from Krishna or in forgetfulness of Krishna. It takes cultivation, going back to these other, because there's this conditioned tendency that which, you know, this is my home and my family and my car and my house and my bank balance and these are material things. So then I have my spiritual thing. I have my sadhana and I have my reading and chanting and I associate with the devotees and then I go and associate with my family members and that's somehow material. It's not material. They're devotees. They're parts of Krishna. It's another service. And then it's, you know, family life is Vaikuntha instead of material. But the world can be Vaikuntha if we have that consciousness. But how can we have the world like that if we don't see our family like that? It doesn't make sense. It's called secularism. There's a name for it. You separate God and your material life. And Bhagavad Gita's teaching, the Bhagavatam's teaching, the devotional teaching is anti-secularism. It's the opposite of secularism. It's in all circumstances, God is to be served, because that's our constitutional position. To have different features of our life to do that from. It takes time, it takes cultivation, because our conditioning is otherwise, just like Amrita's question. Yeah, but however, it is our constitutional nature. And as our consciousness evolves gradually, like, you know, like a little plant that has a little sprout and starts to grow. You ever grow tulsis? Do you have a tulsi plant in your home?
Yes.
You've seen the little tulsis that start to grow in the soil? It's just this little thing. And then two leaves come, and then it's four leaves. And it'll just keep watering, and it'll become a tulsi plant. But so even that little boop, that's also tulsi. So that little devotion that we may have, our understanding may not be mature. But if we accept the principle and cultivate the principle, it'll become mature in the course of time. Our life at home can be as Krishna conscious as our life when we're on the altar worshipping the deity. Another variety of service. Krishna. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
This holiness from Prabhupada Maharaj ki jai.